This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Is about saying that when you invest in small businesses, you invest in the middle class, and you strengthen America's economy. Small businesses are part of the backbone of America's economy.
But pardon me, Madam Vice President. The question was, how are you going to pay for it?
Well, one of the things is I'm going to make sure that the richest among us who can afford it pay their fair share in taxes. It is not right that teachers and nurses and firefighters are paying a higher tax rate than billionaires and the biggest corporations. I plan on making that fair.
But we're dealing with the real world here.
But the real world includes...
How are you going to get this through Congress?
You know, when you talk quietly with a lot of folks in Congress, they know exactly what I'm talking about because their constituents know exactly what I'm talking about. Their constituents are those firefighters and teachers and nurses.
So Kamala Harris says, I don't know if you guys know this, but small businesses are the backbone of our society.
Yeah.
Groundbreaking. She says that, he goes, how the heck are you going to get this done? And she's like, when people in Congress are talking quietly, they all say that they're up for tax the rich so that you can help the middle class. And it's what their constituents say as well. Then they wouldn't be talking quietly about it, would they? She sucks at this. She's so bad.
It is really
She's
bad.
She's so bad.
That's just one continuous thought there, you know, interrupted by a couple of clarify this for me. But she says, you know, the small business is the backbone of the U.S. economy. And we need to do everything we can to, I guess, tax the rich to give to small businesses. And then teachers, firefighters, and nurses are the recipients. That's not small businesses. What are you talking about?
She doesn't know.
Teachers, nurses, firefighters, they're not small business owners unless they're doing something else on the
side.
That's not who you are.
And why do we all have to have side hustles now?
there you go.
You're on it.
She's really bad at this. She's doing more. Tim Walz went on. I actually watched Fox News Sunday. I sat down to watch Fox News Sunday at 2:00. Don't know if I've ever done that before. Ever. I've seen a bazillion clips of Fox News Sunday with Shannon Bream or Chris Wallace and taken in what makes it out of the interview and onto social media. But I've never been like, well, I got to see this. But I did. I can think of one other time that I did it. I was on an airplane. Ooh. And it was Sunday and that was free. So watching Shannon Bream talk to him. She was very Shannon Bream about it, and I adore Shannon Bream. I think she seems like one of the nicest, sweetest, but yet sharpest people in the news business. I trust her wholeheartedly with truth, and I think that that's a rarity. I think that's why she's got the opportunity to do Fox News Sunday, but I trust her to do what needs to be done to dig for and represent truth when she's having an interview with somebody. Tim Walz going on Fox News Sunday, to me, is a sign of desperation might be too strong of a word, but it's definitely a sign from the Harris-Walz campaign that they need to do something different than what they've been doing. Here's one of the questions that Shannon asked Governor Walz.
You modified your story or explained that you misspoke about things involving your military rank, about carrying a weapon in war, your 1995 DUI arrest, using IVF to have your beautiful children, Gus and Hope, being in Hong Kong and China in the summer of 1989 during the Tiananmen events. A lot of people would say they couldn't get away with saying, I'm just too passionate, my grammar's not right, I'm a knucklehead. What do you say to the American people who think, I don't know that I can trust this guy with all those modifications to be the potential commander-in-chief of this country?
Yeah, well, I think they heard me. They heard me the other night speaking passionately about gun violence and misspeaking. And I got to be honest with you, Shannon. I don't think people care whether I used IUI or IVF when we talk about this. What they understand is Donald Trump would resist those things. Look, I speak passionately. I had an entire career decades before I was in public office. They know, and I'm very proud of my 24 years in service and my record. I have never disparaged someone else in this, but I know that's not what Donald Trump does. They disparage everyone. The personal attacks. I will own up when I misspeak. I will own up when I make a mistake.
What about when you lie? Like you just lied in your explanation of not using IVF and using IUI, and then you repeat the lie that you've said many, many other times that suggests that Donald Trump and J.D. Vance are against the idea of IVF. That is completely and totally inaccurate. It's funny to me how much advocacy comes from the Trump campaign to support IVF, specifically, I believe it was in Georgia or Alabama. Was it Georgia?
I think it was Alabama case.
That Donald Trump was a thought leader on that in order to make sure that IVF was protected. There's no evidence anywhere that suggests that Donald Trump is against a woman's and man's, because it's a two-party thing. It's just really that simple.
Two-party system.
very, very bipartisan. That he's against any sort of IVF or fertility treatments in that regard. He's never come out and said that he's against it. Tim Walz is blatantly lying about the Trump lack of support for it in order to cover up for something that I actually do believe was probably a misspeak for him. I think that when IVF, you know, they used IUI instead of IVF, in the context of the policy discussion, maybe they're the same thing. I don't even really know the difference between. Do you know the difference between the two?
No, I don't.
I don't know the difference between the two.
I know a lot about IVF, but I don't know about IUI.
But the point is that they had assistance in conceiving and having children, and that Donald Trump has absolutely supported that. And if Tim Walz, let's just give Tim Walz 100% the benefit of the doubt. He didn't know that there was a difference. You don't know the difference, and you've used IVF. I've never had to use IVF, but I have plenty of friends and acquaintances and family members that have gone through the process of fertility treatments, and I don't know the difference between those. So holding Governor Walz to the standard of having to know, you'd think that if he went through the process and it was not IVF, that maybe he'd know that. But I give him full benefit of the doubt that he mixed the two up and kind of considered them to be similar, whatever. But then why do you go turn around while you're trying to defend yourself from people saying that you lie and then tell a complete and total lie that is completely and totally politically beneficial to you if the lie is true, knowing that the lie is a lie? So he has the opportunity to say, you know what, IVF, IUI, I mixed them up. But it still stands that I am a full supporter of women and men or whatever using fertility treatments to be able to grow a family. And we use that ourselves. And it's just very important that people understand that that is something that we absolutely support. That's what you need to say. And I apologize if I misspoke and it looked like I didn't know what I was talking about in the time. Maybe I didn't know the specifics of the difference between those two. But regardless, I support him. He brushes over a potential misspeak, which is the word that he continues to say, in effort to blatantly and boldly lie about what Donald Trump does and does not support so that he can politically gain from it. So the very meta answer for him to lie within an explanation of not lies, but misspeaks, which is what he continues to say. He's a deceiver. He is a politician in the grossest sense of the term. I'll be the first one to come out and advocate for so many people who serve in office. I say this all the time. People are like, oh, all politicians are, you know, they use a lot of profanity, I guess, when they say that. But they think that every politician that is out there is lying, is just trying to make themselves personally rich. All they want to do is use the office and the access that they have in the office to better themselves or to make themselves more wealthy. And I will always remind people, just in Congress, you have 538 people in Congress. How many can you name? Their chances are most people couldn't name 10. And 10 might be a stretch. Even if you could name 20, that still leaves 518 people that you can't name that are out there. And the chances of some of those people being really good, honest people who are actually there to represent the constituents, I'm telling you, I know a lot of these people, and I know people who exist on both sides of that equation. Tim Walz takes the truth, contorts it, dismisses it, uses it in a manipulated fashion in order to gain politically on it. And that is like the most consistent thing about this man. In a very easy and obvious way to own what you've said before, which is, I said IVF, and we use IUI, and maybe I was a knucklehead for getting those two things mixed up. This just shows that men should have more understanding of what goes on in women's lives, and it's been my life goal to make that the case, because it's been so beneficial in growing our family and giving us our beautiful children and whatever. And I just want every woman out there to know that I'm here to protect your rights, to your reproductive rights. And if you want to vote for a candidate in this election who cares about your reproductive rights, that's the Harris-Walz ticket. And then you're just done. But he can't be done with that. He has to perpetuate a lie. And when he uses a lie to cover up a misspeak, I'm just going to label him as an all-out liar. He doesn't know any better.
Yeah, the problem is exactly what you're saying, that there are two types of lies going on there. One is the knucklehead stuff, the, I kind of exaggerated my service, I exaggerated this and that. Okay, benefit of the doubt, maybe you did. Let's say that you had the best intentions, and yeah, you're just kind of a politician kind of guy out there inflating everything. Okay. But the other stuff that you're saying about your political candidates is provably false. And you're choosing to say that, and you're saying it over and over and over again, knowing it's false. That means that you're okay with lying.
Intent to deceive.
Yeah.
What's odd to me about it is like the stuff that he chooses to lie on, embellish. So you were talking about, you know, IVF versus IUI. They used something, and that, you know, they use fertility treatments to have children, and they have two beautiful children because of that. He could have just said that, and it'd have been fine. But maybe he misspoke or whatever. But then you go over and you look at his military service. He had a long military career, and he served up to a certain point, and he reached a rank, but that wasn't enough. He keeps saying he's proud of it, but he has to say, I was a command sergeant major, which he was bumped up to and then bumped back down to because he didn't complete the requirements to get the rank, and he lied about that. And then you look at Tiananmen Square. Why on earth do you have to lie about that?
He thinks he's Forrest Gump.
You know, it's like, well, I was there. I was in it. And it's like, well, I was actually in Hong Kong. I was, and it was months later.
And it was not. You were not even in China.
So it's weird to me that he has to embellish everything that he does, even on the stuff that would be seemingly something to be proud about.
Yeah, imagine being somebody who served in the National Guard, 24 years or something like that, who did what he did, and who ran on the record that was real and accurate. Imagine saying that you did what you did without any embellishment and then somebody coming out and criticizing you for it.
Yeah.
Like, you don't need to go a step further. You don't need to talk about the weapons of war that you carried. You don't need to talk about being a rank that you aren't. You don't need to talk about serving in combat. I think our people who serve in the National Guard are freaking fantastic people, knowing that they can get called into combat at any given time. When you sign up and you know that that's part of the promise that you're making, I have mad respect for that. There's no amount of, well, that's, you know, average. Like, nobody thinks that. We love anybody who puts on a uniform and potentially puts them in harm's way in order to protect us. We love our police officers. We love our EMTs. We love the people who show up at a potentially scary situation and are there to help. Firefighters. I mean, you don't have to embellish it, but for some reason he feels very comfortable bending the truth on a regular basis, and it always is bent in the direction of making him look better than he thinks he actually looks. Like, dude, your service was fantastic as it was. You didn't need the extra spice. You've oversalted here.
Yeah, it's not necessary. Running for federal office is bigger and more, there's much more scrutiny doing what he's doing now than running for governor of Minnesota. But I don't know what politically he was gaining when he was running for these other positions within Minnesota, as if somebody's going to go, he was only a lieutenant colonel. I would have voted for him if he was a colonel. You know, like what does that gain you?
Have you seen the P. Diddy meme that says, like, I'm sorry, guys, I was just a knucklehead?
No.
It's like, is this a worthy defense? I don't think it is for P. Diddy. Let's take a quick break. We're going to connect with Steve Moore, hopefully, when we come back. We're going to talk to him about this election that is coming up and what we heard from Kamala Harris when it comes to her talking about how she's going to fund all of her plans. The rich need to pay their fair share, Kamala Harris says, sort of in a whole lot of words. We'll figure out what Steve Moore says when we come back. True, there was a woman.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. Thank you for being with us this afternoon. Feels like fall outside. I know that makes Ryan Wiggins happy.
Man, this weekend was stupid.
It was kind of a lie.
The temperature was...
It was like Tim Walz was out there trying to tell you it's fall.
Yeah. I was like, I don't believe you, Tim Walz, every time I walked outside this weekend.
That's every time.
Yep.
90 degrees.
90 degrees. I'm like, Tim Walz.
Feels like Tim
Barack
Walz
Obama.
To me.
Yeah.
I think there are people in our audience who probably do that. Hello. We're happy to see you. You know that there are people in our audience who do the same thing about Donald Trump.
Oh, heck yeah. And will for years.
Yeah.
The Barack Obama one's still funny because it's not relevant anymore.
Thanks, Obama.
Yeah, thanks, Obama. Yeah.
That was a regular thing that you would say about everything. I do kind of wonder what the TDSers that are out there, they exist to hate Donald Trump. If he is president for 4 years, is it going to be the best time of their lives or the worst time of their lives?
Oh, that's a good question.
Because they get what they want.
I remember hearing some comedians and communicators say that once Donald Trump lost the election and Joe Biden was in, that they had this moment that they were really happy, and then they realized, you know what, I'm not talking to my dad as much. Like, they would talk to relatives who either they agreed with or disagreed with because Donald Trump said something crazy today. And they were like, I kind of missed the era where I was communicating with my family more about these things.
Yeah, I used to be able to talk about, like, politics could come up and people would kind of like get their thoughts out, maybe a little passive aggressively, and then you'd move on to something else. You'd talk about like the Cardinals or something. But now you can't do that. It's like an affront.
Mm-hmm.
To bring up Donald Trump in mixed company.
Yeah. Yeah. It's unfortunate.
What about the families that have been divided over Donald Trump? There are families that have been divided over Donald Trump as the president of the United States, as a candidate for president of the United States once again, where the anti-Trumpers are actually voting for Trump now.
Oh, man. I would love to tell you that I've seen a poll on this, but... Those people,
how would you poll that?
Do not want to be found.
No, there are people who have supported Donald Trump the whole time and don't want to be found.
Yeah.
If you have, I mean, I feel for those people because they've been so actively deceived by a media and they want something to be true so much that the alternative to Donald Trump being the boogeyman that they think that he is, the truth on the other side of that, where he's crass. He's combative, but he's incredibly good for the American economy. He's incredibly good for American safety and security. He's incredibly good for the mentality of America first, which makes our nation a strong nation so that we can use the strength of our nation and the wealth of our nation to help other nations that are in need. All of these things come together to say that while he might not be the person you want to, this always gets me, like, I wouldn't want Donald Trump to babysit my kids. I'm like, I don't think he's offering. I think you're good there. What about helping your kids' college fund go bonkers so that the economy is strong and that when your kids do graduate from high school and go into college, that the job market is there for them to pursue a career that's going to pay them a wage that can afford groceries and gasoline and to not have to panic when you have an emergency appliance breakdown or something like that. You have to pay for the service to come out, and the service costs more because the gas to get there has cost more. The hard cost involved in what it is they're going to need to replace costs more. So everything costs more. Do you hate your children's future so much that your emotions are going to stop you from voting for what's best for them? in the decades to come? And the answer is, to many people, they hate Trump that much. Is it too strong to say they hate Trump more than they love their kids?
Oh, yes. I saw one of those videos the other day. It was somebody who came to the light. You know, these exist on both sides. It was somebody in this case who had been a Biden supporter who now is a Trump supporter. And there's people who were Trump supporters and now they're videos on both sides. But this was one of those where the person said, the argument that changed my mind was one that I think the person talking to them said, if you had to have surgery, and we've brought this up before.
Oh, yeah.
If you had to have surgery, would you rather have an inexperienced surgeon whose track record is pretty bad at surgery, but they've got great bedside manner? Or would you rather have a surgeon who's done 20,000 of your exact surgeries? You've already seen him do it. He's amazing.
And he's a total jerk.
But he's terrible at talking to the patients. Which one? And she said, "Of course, I get it now. I would go with the great surgeon."
I have a dear friend who was in that literal situation here in St. Louis. I won't get too specific on the doctor and where the doctor was from, but they talked about it was cancer. They were trying to have a cancer surgery, remove cancer from someone's body, and the doctor is the best at it, like in the country. Top five doctors that you would move heaven and earth to have yourself or your loved one be seen by this doctor. And not only does he have bad, like, is he not kind or whatever, he's like aggressively mean. And it becomes a challenge to endure that. But if you got this doctor, you're keeping this doctor. And the truth about Donald Trump is, even the things that people perceive him to be mean about, he's not really, he's, if you've ever been around somebody who understands people in a way, like a very dynamic person who has the ability to bring the best out of people in a leadership role, who understands how to motivate people, who understands how to praise people, but they also have this other side where it's like, if your hand's not in the middle, it's the opposite of that. That's really kind of what Donald Trump is. He's a very dynamic, charismatic person, and his direction has a lot to do with your participation in trying to get the job done. And when he's working with people that aren't effectively trying to get to the bottom line of whatever the job is that they're trying to get done, he doesn't have any time for that. You're wasting his time. And he doesn't appreciate that and respect that. And I kind of look at it like that's the way everybody feels about that, but he just handles it differently.
You know, you've heard stories before of bankrupt companies where a new leader comes in and goes, look, we are in trouble. This whole thing, you know, the bakery that went under, you know, the new owner shows up and goes, look, we got to change the way we bake these goods. And everybody goes, well, that's not the way we've done it before. The new owner has to go.
How's that working for you?
Yeah, you have to bake these differently. We got to streamline the process. And if you have a whole bunch of people around you at your bakery who will not change, you got to get rid of them. That was basically Donald Trump's first 2 years of office, maybe even longer, was full of people, Republicans included, who were constantly telling him, but that's not the way we do it. That's not the way we've always done it.
He took a lot of direction and hired a lot of people who were not, I serve at the pleasure of the president. They served to corral the president, to keep the president in the boundaries of the swamp. And he didn't know that coming. And he said that before, like, we didn't have good people. It's one of the things that he was bringing Bobby Kennedy on to make sure that he isn't being used by the people who, you know, run big pharma or whatever, people who are profiting off of their government relationships, lobbying for one thing and then turning around and getting another job directly with a company that ends up getting paid from the thing they lobbied for and so on and so forth, that he is aggressively pursuing getting the right people in place on day one and leaning on people like Bobby Kennedy who know about this particular area to say, guide me in choosing good people here. Elon Musk trimming the fat. I mean, I don't know what Elon Musk is capable of doing when it comes to trimming the fat, but that is what Americans have been needing for so incredibly long, which is a government that understands spending within our means, not their means. They have no means. They have to take from us in order to have means, in order to do things. Where you see, good grief, Kamala Harris's tweet over the weekend about Lebanon, the people in Lebanon. Did you see this?
No, I didn't see it.
I mean, it's really quite something to watch Kamala Harris as the vice president of the United States be so tone deaf on what is taking place on our shores. We have another. This Hurricane Milton is a Category 5 hurricane that is coming to... Did I just see that? Just said 175 miles an hour. I'm watching the scroll on Fox News right now. Winds at 175 miles an hour, and it looks like it's going to come up through the Gulf, which has all this warm water that helps feed the strength of this hurricane. And I don't know what the total trajectory of this is, but it's supposed to go kind of cut through Florida, the peninsula of Florida. And I've seen, you know, we've seen before where they go out into the ocean and then they spin back and circle back and hit the East Coast again. Good freaking grief. What happens if that takes place? This is what Kamala Harris tweeted this weekend on October 5th. So 2 days ago, Saturday at 7:37 p.m. The people of Lebanon are facing an increasingly dire humanitarian situation. I am concerned about the security and well-being of civilians suffering in Lebanon and will continue working to help meet the needs of all civilians there. To that end, the United States will provide nearly $157 million in additional assistance to the people of Lebanon for essential needs such as food, shelter, water, protection, and sanitation to help those who have been displaced by the recent conflict. This additional support brings total U.S. assistance to Lebanon over the last year to over $385 million.
Oh my gosh,
read,
are you kidding me?
The flipping room, Vice President Harris. It's a real post. She really put that out there. $385 million of money that comes from where? Could any of that money go to North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, Florida? Could any of that money be used for the American citizens who are in dire need right now when that money came from them in the first place? And oh, just imagine it not having to be laundered through the government first in order to be useful to those people who continuously talk about nobody showing up to help them. It's not a political problem. It's not a PR problem. We have a moral problem in our government and the way that they take your money and my money to fund things that don't actually help us. It is a moral problem. And it needs a moral solution. And the moral solution is not Donald Trump. The moral solution has to come from the American people. It might manifest itself in a Donald Trump presidency. And, you know, we talk about morality and leaders and stuff. If you have any question about the morality of people who, from a Christian standpoint, and I don't believe that you have to have a Christian faith to have a moral understanding. I think you can not have a Christian faith and have or any religious faith and understand morally what is right and what is wrong. But before anybody starts trying to apply biblical principles to the thought of possibly supporting a man like Donald Trump, start reading the people who God appointed to lead his people in the Bible and point me to the one that wasn't a completely sinfully broken person. Find me one. I'll wait. I have till three. The idea that somehow or another the person who's going to lead God's people or the person who's going to lead the people of the United States of America for Republicans to support them has to be some sort of morally righteous person. There's only been one. He died. He came back. He's waiting to return. All of that said and done. There is no perfect person that is going to run on the Republican side of the ticket. You're going to be able to point to that person every single time and say, morally, they fall short. We could do the same exercise on the left, but we don't need to do that because on the left, we don't have those same expectations for the person who's running as a candidate for the party on the left. We only apply those standards to the people who run on the side of the Republicans because they're trying to make you out to be a hypocrite for supporting somebody who is a sinfully broken person. If you are a Christian and you are a Republican, how dare you support a man like Donald Trump? And I would just say to those people, what, because he's a sinner? And then they say, of course he's a sinner. And then they list you all of these things that aren't even factually accurate, like saying he's a convicted rapist, which is completely and totally not true. if you want to make the case to me that he is somebody who has broken the Sixth Commandment, I can cross the aisle on that one and throw that back, but nobody cares. It doesn't matter which sins he's committed. It doesn't matter the fact that he is a broken, sinful person. If I myself am a broken, sinful person in need of the same Jesus that Donald Trump needs and that Kamala Harris needs and that anybody needs as somebody who is speaking for my Christian faith. The morally righteous people on the left who want to apply a religion that they A, do not understand, and B, are not willing to research, and C, are willing to manipulate for a political gain, you don't have to participate in those conversations. Null and void. Find me the person, if you want to inject religion into it, it doesn't have to be about Donald Trump. You can't only apply that to Donald Trump. It has to apply to every man, every woman who's ever led anything ever that has to do with God's people. And they are all tragically broken, sinful people in need of a savior, which is way more important if you're a Christian like I am than winning any specific election. Now will we get out of the way the fact that, no, Donald Trump isn't morally righteous. I don't think Donald Trump thinks he's morally righteous. I think he actually feels in a really tangible way right now how merciful and how much grace that he has received from who he says God was looking down on him twice when his life was on the line by somebody who wanted him dead. Now that we've got that out of the way, and we are all together acknowledging the fact that Donald Trump is by no means a perfect person, is not righteous in his own regard in any way, shape, or form, can we talk about what's good for the future of this country? Can we talk about what's good for your pocketbook? Can we talk about what's good for American safety and security and making sure fentanyl doesn't find its way into your suburban home that's far, far, far away from some sort of American border? That's where the conversations for real, genuinely serious people take place. And you'll know real fast if they're serious or not. Let's take a quick break. We're going to talk about the Annie Fry YouTube live chat poll when we come back. Why is Donald Trump running for president? Is he running for the country or is he running just for himself? Tell us what you think by visiting us on YouTube. Just search up Annie Fry, F-R-E-Y, and you'll see that our channel is broadcasting live right now. And with that live video is a chat. Lots of folks chatting each day there. We've got about 170 people on YouTube right now, and the conversation is hopping. You can join it, but you can just simply vote, anonymously even, in that YouTube poll and tell us why you think Donald Trump is running for the country or for himself. We'll be right back.
A political rally. It meant so much more.
Mm-hmm.
Honor the family, Corey, who lost his life, yes, and those who were shot. But to finish the job, nothing symbolizes more this man, Donald Trump. He is more resilient than anyone I've ever met. It symbolizes the nation. You couldn't leave this with this community that was the last instance. When the president says, as I was saying, what he's saying is, I'm finishing the speech. I'm going to finish my job. I got one more term. I'm going to do the very best for this nation, and I'll never give up on it. And to the crowd that was there, you know, I remember talking to the president the day after the shooting, mm-hmm, and he was telling me how he could hear the bullet, right? But what dawned on me when you watched the assassination attempt, no one ran.
Right.
Nobody ran. And the defiance when they stood up that they were going to fight for the nation, I think it was more of a symbol for the entire nation to heal. I'm back. We're going to honor those who are shot, and we're not going to give up on you.
That's Kevin McCarthy, and I love hearing him. I like hearing him speak. I think that what he's been able to do since he got booted from the speakership and then resigned his position in Congress has been helpful. He's a voice of reason in my mind. I have never had a problem with Speaker McCarthy the way many other people did. I think that politics is so complicated that if you're in Congress, you have to understand how to stand for things and know that other people have to stand for things that are oppositional to you. But you got to still figure out, where do we intersect? What are the things where we can come together and work on commonalities that we have? And that can easily be turned into a political stage show for creating enemies within your own party. And I think the Republican Party is super experienced it, stupid stuff like that.
It's funny because the criticisms of Mike Johnson have been the same as Kevin McCarthy.
Yeah.
Kevin McCarthy got caught in a moment when the Republicans, and I love that Republicans are doing this kind of thing, like asking these questions anyway, whether or not they're going about it the right way, I don't know. But they're saying, we don't want business as usual in Congress. We don't want business as usual in the House. Well, you didn't control the Senate, so I don't know how far you're going to get with that. But, excuse me. But Mike Johnson's getting the same criticism. They're not ousting him.
We don't have.
So,
I mean, you want things to be different, then you've got to get a bigger majority. You can't.
Yeah.
You can't dramatically change things when a single person can hold everything up. And, you know, that's on you. You're going to have to either hold everything to a standstill, or you're going to have to find some things that you can work on together to get the business of the people done. It's intentionally slow. The glacial pace of Congress is intentional. The founding fathers did not want the people who represent you in government to be able to like whip up legislation and it's done. And now you've got a new law regulating you. They didn't want that to be the case. So it's slow on purpose. This is a question for the 2 o'clock hour. So I'm going to ask this question now. We'll discuss it in the 2 o'clock hour. I know where I was driving. I was on the on ramp to get onto 255 from 270 to come into work the other day. And I don't know why, but I kind of looked around me because you can see Illinois is as flat as can be. And it's very comforting to me. You can't ever accidentally roll down a hill. That's why it's so nice. But you can just see so much. There are all these buildings that are, you know, Amazon has a ton of buildings out there. That's right where the Amazon tornado hit and everything. There's all of this progress everywhere. You can see St. Louis and the city skyline. You can see farms. You can see trucks and cars, like everything. And I thought to myself, would the founding fathers be in this moment right now, if they were in the car with, if I had Ben Franklin and you know, all of the founding fathers, Madison and Jefferson, sitting in this car with me right now, and I got a Pacifica, I can fit eight, that includes me. Would they be so proud, like awestruck and proud? But I had Fox News on or CNN on in my car at the particular time, and they were talking about how terrible everything is. Or would they be so disappointed? I could go drastically in either way. We'll talk about that in the 2 o'clock hour.
Well, I think the first thing they would say is, "There's a horseless carriage."
Yeah, just like that.
And I'm in it.
You have a television screen in the back seat, and it's playing The Lion King.
They'd be trying to grab it. They'd be like, "What is this magic box?" That's the first thing.
You never know. You never know. I'm interested in what y'all think too. If you have a thought on that, leave us a comment on the Andy Frye YouTube channel. The YouTube poll for today, though, is why is Donald Trump running for president? Is he running for the country or for himself? Because this is a criticism. We might even hear it daily in some way, shape, or form with people who listen to the show. They never miss a beat. They're always there. They hate Donald Trump and they think that he's maybe the most selfish person to ever walk the face of the planet. What do you think?
I think this is very much a gradient, and I think both of these things exist in every politician, Donald Trump included. If I'm going to answer the poll, I'd say in 2016, I think that gradient actually shifted toward Donald Trump. I think he was running to promote himself and then realized that he was going to win. He still wanted good for the country.
You think he started running because he just wanted to up his game, like his profile in 2016?
I do. I don't think that anymore. I think that the easy way out for him after the last election was to bow out. It has cost him a lot to run this time.
Nearly his life.
So I can't answer this poll any other way than to say for the country this time.
Josh agrees with you, and he says the answer is both. What do you think, Brad?
I don't see how any way that it could be that he thinks it's for the betterment of the country. I don't know why he would keep doing it after getting shot.
Saying you think it is for the country.
I think it's for the country. I can't get past that. I mean, the dude's rich. He could just walk away.
He could. Let's know what you think. I'll read more of your comments in the 2 o'clock hour, and we'll dive into that thought experiment. With the founding fathers return today in October of 2024, would they be impressed or would they be disappointed and sad? Let us know. We'll be right back. Jolene, Jolene,
Jolene, Jolene. This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.